So just to put on the forefront, I'm feeling really under the weather right now. So if my voice turns into Batman's voice again, that's why, just to let you guys know. But thank you for braving the elements, for coming out here, being able to come together and worship Jesus together as a Little Falls Alliance Church and as a greater church body. So it means a lot to me to see this. Welcome to Youth Sunday. My name is Chris Secourt, and I'm the youth pastor here at Alliance. And it's great seeing this next generation band together and come together and utilize the gifts and talents, rather natural and spiritual, in a capacity that blesses the church, that brings the church into unity, and ultimately edifies God's word and changes the spiritual landscape of Little Falls. And the reason I say that is because it's refreshing, redeeming, it's just awesome. At the end of the day, it's just cool to see and experience. And I think it's great when we as a local church and other local churches give students the platform of influence and the platform of opportunity to utilize those gifts and the capacity that God has gifted them. On a side note, I was talking with Addie and Marky, and they were making fun of me like they normally do. And they're saying, you know, Chris, it wouldn't be a message if it weren't for three things: your thumbs up, capacity, or process. I'm like, that's not true. And I start watching videos. I'm like, oh, that totally is true. So bear with me. I apologize about that. But anyways, my parents were Jesus-centered parents. They were awesome parents. I grew up in a Christian home with parents that loved me unconditionally, that were there for me whenever I messed up in the most ransom ways. And the reason I say that is because their parenting style was vastly different than my friends' parenting styles. My parents wanted me to be empowered and not like, here's a ribbon, Chris, for participating. Way to go, stud. But hey, son, we know that God has gifted you, has blessed you with gifts, and we want to give you platforms of opportunity to use those gifts. I remember in one case, the first time I ever spoke in church, It was a train wreck. It was awful. And I went up and I started talking about something, and what came out of my mouth sounded like this: Jesus! Thank you. And then I sat down, and my parents pulled me aside and were like, that was really good. Slow down for the next service. And so I did that. But what was really cool was, despite my mess ups, they still had my back. My youth pastor had my back. The church, blessed wise that are free, the church had my back, and they still wanted to empower me, even though it wasn't the greatest. It was different, right? It was a good difference. It was a good change to see an older generation invest into a younger generation and give them a platform. But there's a flip side to it. Change can sometimes bring influence in not so great ways. Right, maybe you can relate to that. Maybe you've been on the flip side where change has brought good into your life, and maybe change has brought bad into your life. When I was in sixth grade, I was attending a private school out in Maple Grove, it's a suburb of the Twin Cities. And the cost of tuition, paired with my dad losing his job, led our family to make some difficult decisions and reevaluate our financial outgiving. And so my parents wanted me to still have a private school education. And so they began looking elsewhere to see if they can afford a private school education with the limited funds that we had coming in. And so I left Heritage Christian Academy and enrolled into Redeemer Lutheran School out in Wayzata. And you have to understand, for me, this was a huge cultural shift. I enrolled in a class that was 12 kids. So I went from a class of 50 kids, not very big, I know that, but I went into a class of 12 kids, and in my mind, that was a huge jump, partly because as a middle school boy, if there was a girl I like, she was going to find out in 30 seconds, because everybody knows what you're thinking when you're in a class of 12 people. It's kind of like having a youth group of 20 kids. It's awesome, but also dysfunctional at points. But you have to understand, apart from that change, there was an economical change, right? Mind you, my dad didn't have income, and so I was a kid in my class that was getting clothes from the thrift store. I love thrift store shopping now. It's great. It's solid. It's the best thing ever. But when you're going to Wayzata and you have kids wearing Abercrombie, Hollister, Aeropostale, and you look at what you got on, kind of make some insecurities there. And so I found a group of students that I felt I could belong to. And so what I did was I ingrained myself into the skater culture, got into some punk rock and some really cool music, some really fast music. And everything was awesome for me. I started skateboarding with these guys. We started listening to punk rock. And everything just seemed to be meshing and coming together. And then one night, we had a sleepover. And things drastically changed. We went on the computer and we looked up some images that we shouldn't have looked at. And I knew it wasn't right. I felt seriously conflicted because I was a Jesus follower. When I was 12, I got baptized. I professed in front of all of my church family that I am following Jesus, that I'm going to put the ways of the world behind me and I'm going to move towards the cross. I'm going to carry my cross. I'm going to be with Jesus. I'm going to be ingrained in his DNA. And here I am in middle school with a group of students looking at images I shouldn't be looking at, and I have this serious conflict just boiling inside of me. But the problem was, I didn't want my reputation to be damaged. I didn't want to lose this group of friends because I didn't want to go back to where I was when I first came to the school where I felt like a loner. Maybe you can relate to that. And so I gave in to what they were doing and started ingraining myself in the habits that they were doing, and I started setting aside Jesus for the sake of protecting my reputation. And so afterward, I transitioned out of that school after eighth grade, and then I went to Monticello High School, public school. And so no longer was I in a private school institution, no longer was I having a Jesus-centered curriculum put upon me, but now I was having a public school curriculum set upon me. It's a huge cultural shock. And so I went from a suburban context into a semi-rural context. I went from a class of 12 students to now 300 students. The good news here, though, if there was a girl I liked, she wouldn't know until the end of the day. So that was good. But I was still very much into skateboarding. I was still very much into punk rock. And so I went from this cultural context to a semi-rural context where people listened to this music called country, where everyone had twang and talked about pickup trucks. And then when it was bring your tractor to school day, I thought that was a metaphor. And kids are actually rolling up into the parking lot in their tractors. And I'm over here with my skateboard. Huh. That's different. And so just with all that, it was a lot for me. And again, this insecurity inside of me began to boil out. And I was back in the same spot I was in seventh grade going, oh, I want to fit in. I want friends. I don't want to be a loser. I didn't give up skateboarding or punk rock. I'll tell you that much. But I started hanging out with a group of friends and just led me to more trouble eventually with the law. And so this desire of protecting my reputation and setting aside Jesus just kept leading me to more and more trouble, more than what I bargained for. Again, how many of you can relate with that? Right? And so I was raised with this biblical worldview. And you have to understand, for those of you who are parents of teenagers, I'm hoping you're raising your children to be followers of Jesus, to love Jesus. And to be raised with this worldview and then have my parents see me do all these actions that are counterintuitive to what they raised me, one, there was conflict inside of me, but there was conflict inside my parents. But the moment that that external context changed, insecurity crept in, and I allowed sin to rule me instead of my king. I was more concerned about protecting my reputation than I was about following Jesus. Man, that stinks. Right? Like, how many of us can relate with that? And so whether you're a Jesus follower or not, we all have a reputation. So again, if you profess to be a Jesus follower, you got a reputation. If you don't profess to be a Jesus follower, you still have a reputation. And we all have this desire to maybe protect our reputation, maybe to enhance our reputation, or maybe just keep subtle. Like, we don't want to be in the forefront, we just want to stay in the background. Now, regardless of this, of all this, here's what I came across to reputation. Reputation is the general opinion that people have about someone or something. Next slide. Sorry about that, Kim. Oh, we don't? Okay. Anyways, so here's what I came across. Reputation is the general opinion that people have about someone or something. And so when I looked at that definition, I realized that a major root of reputation is that we desire to be recognized for our accomplishments. Did that one go through too? No, it was just that single slide? Okay, sounds good. So last year, Taylor Swift, last November, released her sixth studio album. And so do you guys know what that studio album is called? Reputation. Who said that? Nice. Yeah, Reputation. And so her previous album, 1989, was a huge commercial success. It was catchy, it was singable, it was memorable, and frankly, with the next generation culture, it's probably going to stick with them for a lifetime. Now, in general, our accomplishments, rather good or bad, often define our reputation. And so if a major root of reputation is recognition, I think one can make an argument then that Taylor Swift intentionally called her most recent album Reputation because she wants people to recognize and acknowledge the work that she has left and the imprint that it has on this next generation. Her accomplishments are making forward progression. And what we are known for is often imprinted by what we do. And so there are two ways we can look at this. Our reputation either displays Jesus as Lord, or our reputation either displays us as Lord. And so in other words, we're either worshiping Jesus or we're worshiping something or someone else. Again, when I was in middle school and high school, I was worshiping myself. You know, at the end of the day, I was selfish. I wanted to be accepted, and so I put Jesus on the back burner. And so I want to be sensitive to this because I think that story that I shared, I think there's a much broader sense of what's going on culturally within the American church. And I have a genuine concern that the church can sometimes be more in love with the thought of worshiping Jesus than actually worshiping Jesus. And I don't want to sound like I'm pinning it on us as Little Falls. I'm saying this in a very broad context. And the reason I say that, when we actually worship Jesus, this requires us to surrender to Jesus. And surrender is really difficult, right? It's challenging, and here's why. When we have to surrender, we have to give up, and we have to submit. And so maybe right now you're recognizing your reputation speaks more of your parenting accomplishments more than what they speak of what Jesus is doing in your family. Or maybe your reputation speaks more towards your professional accomplishments. You know, maybe for the next generation, maybe your reputation speaks more towards your academic successes or your athletic successes. All really good things. Don't get me wrong. These are all really solid things. But if these accomplishments consume us to where we desire to protect our recognition more than we desire to display Jesus' accomplishments, we have stepped into some serious problems. And so what I want to ask you is your reputation keeping you from Jesus? Are you consuming Jesus or consuming your reputation? You are what you feed on. And so we see this similar situation over in John 12. I'm going to pull up my Bible app for you guys. And it's a really cool story where I kind of called it the moldy sandwich scenario, if you may, and I'll explain a little bit more about that. But we have these two people groups where you have people who know Jesus, and then you have people who don't know Jesus, and then you see how all this comes together and how it conflicts and causes this repertoire of protecting one's reputation. So this is from John 12, verse 37. I really feel like a millennial right now. I just realized how this might look to some of you guys because I got my manuscript over here and this over here. Anyways, but despite all the miraculous signs Jesus had done, most of the people still did not believe in him. And so we can call this verse the top bun, let's just say. We can call this verse the top bun, the top ingredient of someone's hamburger. We have this unbelieving generation, and then we have the condiments of the patty. Oh, it is here. Awesome, perfect. John 12:40. The Lord has blinded their eyes and hardened their hearts. And so this unbelieving generation has hard hearts and zero vision. And so the top bun, the condiments, represent an unbelieving generation with hard hearts, zero vision, because God orchestrated this. And so when I was reading this passage, I was wondering, God, you are so good. Why would you do this? Why would you harden hearts? Why would you blind people spiritually so that they don't recognize what your son is doing in their communities? You know, like this seems kind of counterintuitive to God. And it was hard for me to read through, but here's what I've drawn towards. The hardening of hearts and misunderstanding of Jesus very well could come down to generational sin. We read about this in Exodus and elsewhere in the Old Testament. Many people didn't believe because the faith was not passed on from generation to generation. Here's a couple examples. So each generation should set its hope anew on God, not forgetting his glorious miracles and obeying his commands. Then they will not be like their ancestors, refusing to give their hearts to God. So there's a contrast here where if you remember God and what he is doing and the glory that he is casting over his people, they're going to have hearts that fall after God. They're going to have hearts that are chiseled from stone to flesh that are going to resemble the Father's love for his people, for this world. But on the flip side, if you have a generation that doesn't pour God's love and pour God's experience into the next generation, then they refuse to follow after the Father's heart. Ryan's been doing an awesome job with casting this vision of heart of stone to heart of flesh. And Psalm 78 is a warning then as it is now that if we don't resemble Jesus, hard hearts miss him. We see this in Exodus with Pharaoh. And then we have Judges 21. In those days, Israel had no king, and all the people did whatever seemed right in their own eyes. And again, like when we look at this, people are being consumed by what they are known for rather than what God is orchestrating, commanding them to do. All right, they felt that if what I feel is okay or what I feel is right, then it must be good. You know, we hear that a lot today. Maybe things haven't changed so much. And so both these passages, they both indicate that God's story needs to be passed on from generation to generation. And so while people may know the stories of God delivering Israel, they themselves did not experience the grace of God because for generations, They did not enter into God's grace, right? When we don't pass on the faith, when this people group that Jesus is working with don't pass on the faith, they experience hard hearts. And I think that's a big reason why they missed Jesus. I think that's a reason why Isaiah prophesied about this, because he knew that Israel was going to be stubborn in her ways and miss what Jesus was doing. Man, church, family, I don't want that to be you. I don't want you to be stuck in your ways where again, like your parental accomplishments, your professional accomplishments, your academic accomplishments, your athletic accomplishments, all good things, but I don't want you to get so consumed that that becomes your God. I hope you hear my heart on this. And so they grew up without experiencing God, and when you have generational fabrics that are woven together like this, it creates not only a cultural paradigm, it creates a family paradigm that doesn't emphasize one's own experience with God. It's evident then that this unbelieving generation is influential to the next generation because we read this. And so this becomes the bottom bun, okay? Many people did believe in him, however, including some of the Jewish leaders, but they wouldn't admit for fear that the Pharisees would expel them from the synagogue. They loved human praise more than the praise of God. They wouldn't admit for fear that they would be kicked out of the institution that they were a part of. They loved the recognition, the acknowledgement, the praise from their leaders, from people of influence, rather than the ultimate king. Man, that sounds so much like us today in so many ways, probably more ways than we would care to admit, you know? Do you see these negative consequences when influential people, like these Pharisees, right? We dog on the Pharisees a lot, I know that, but we have to acknowledge they had heavy influence in their culture. And so these influence from the Pharisees, these people were more concerned about protecting their reputations with the Pharisees. They were more concerned about protecting their recognitions with the Pharisees than they were about coming out and telling the Pharisees, we're going to follow Jesus. And so the thought of worshiping Jesus was cool. The thought of following Jesus was good. But their actions didn't reflect what they professed or thought. Their actions didn't reflect that. Man, that is so hard. And so, to kind of emphasize that, I have this very delicious-looking burger. Look at that. Look at that sucker. There's some melted cheese. I think sausage. I think this is a pretzel bun with more cheese on it. What do you guys think? Does it look good? That's what I was thinking. It's kind of gross looking. But here's kind of like what I'm getting at. You are what you feed on. Okay? And so with the Pharisees, they were more concerned about glorifying themselves. And so they consumed this nasty burger or this nasty sandwich. And because of that, their hearts were hard, their eyes were blind to the fact that the miracles and the glory that was surrounding them through Jesus' presence. And then you have this younger generation, you have these people under their influence who see how the Pharisees are interacting with one another, are interacting with Jesus. And so then they start becoming concerned and insecure about their own reputation and their own recognition. And so they start dwelling back into themselves to protect their reputation so they would receive acceptance in the synagogue from the Pharisees. And so what I mean by this is that Jesus, he calls us not to display or show off ourselves, right? That's not so much being a follower. Instead, Jesus calls us to be a disciple, which means to be a learner, a follower of him. And so we can't be consuming our reputation. We can't be consuming our recognition or our accomplishments. We have to be consuming Jesus because one puts us on the throne in our hearts and the other puts the rightful king in the throne of our hearts. And in order to put the rightful king on the throne of our hearts, we have to back what we say with what we do and be a disciple of Jesus, a follower of Jesus, a learner of Jesus. Because if I was to eat this right now, bad things would happen to me. Likewise, if we consume sin, bad things happen. Sad things happen. Things that are outside of God's design and purpose for you. Hard hearts miss Jesus. And when hard hearts miss Jesus, hard hearts become what they feed on. This really gross sandwich from Holiday. Thanks, Holiday. And so this is speculation here on my end, but I almost wonder if this unbelieving generation in John at one point did follow God. God's made himself known to mankind. And so I wonder, did they actually follow God at one point? And kind of like these other people, maybe they are more concerned with what their teachers thought of them or other people of influence that they put the sovereign God on the back burner of their lives, which is just a bit of an oxymoron in a way. They sacrifice an intimate relationship with the king for the sake of earthly reputation, which in the grand scheme of things is insignificant to eternity. And so when Jesus comes onto the scene, he knows the condition of people's hearts. And I'm convinced that this verse demonstrates that. I'm convinced that Jesus is aware. This is John 12:46. I have come as a light to shine in the dark world so that all who put their trust in me will no longer remain in the dark. There's a process of transformation here, moving from darkness into the light. And so I'm somewhat stating the obvious here, but Jesus is empowering people, is encouraging people to move out of the darkness and into the light. And that darkness for some people was protecting the very reputation that they sought after, that they wanted to build. And again, even if our accomplishments are genuine good things, if it's not honoring Jesus, I'll put it bluntly to you, church, it's sin. If your reputation becomes the God of your life, that becomes idolatry. And the good news, though, church, the really sweet news, Jesus' mission was to bring sight to the blind and to make dead people alive. And it's something that I've been telling some of like my youth workers, some of my students, whether through text messaging, like one-on-ones or from the stage, is that Jesus didn't come to make bad people good. Jesus came to make dead people alive. It's really important for us to understand, because if we look at it from Jesus is making bad people good, we're injecting legalism into the gospel, and legalism gives birth to one protecting their reputation because they don't want to be known for the burdens and the hurts that are in their lives. Whereas if we look at it from Jesus is coming to make dead people alive, I can say then that when I looked at pornography, I was dead, but Jesus made me alive because he loves me. You know? And again, I'm not trying to dog on good accomplishments, whether it's professional or parental. If you can be a resource for your community, I really encourage you to be a resource for your community. But please, be a resource that is Jesus-centered. Our reputation at the end of the day is going to mean nothing if Jesus isn't at the center of it. And maybe that means for some of us, maybe that means we have to take a break from what we are known to do. Maybe that means you need to rest, reset, and refocus on Jesus. And I know that's difficult because that involves us to surrender. But think of the kingdom accomplishments that can come from a reputation that is not only resourceful, but also Jesus-centered. Think of the change that would be birthed here in Little Falls if every single one of us, if every single one of us capitalized on Jesus in the midst of our reputation to the point where people recognized us as, oh, man, Dan's a Jesus follower, Hannah's a Jesus follower, Kevin is a Jesus follower. There's probably like, what, about 100 people in here, 75 to 100 people in here. Think of the change that could come in our city if everyone that we came into contact knew who we served. So let's put the sandwich away. Let's put the sin away and let's consume Jesus. Let's be all in for Jesus as a church family. Let's come together and follow Christ. Because when we worship and connect and serve, that becomes an intentional act of surrendering to the Holy Spirit. And when we surrender to the Holy Spirit, we as a church body, down to the 5-year-old kid in junior church, can discern what the Spirit is leading and empowering us to do in whatever context we may find ourselves in here in Little Falls. And so again, maybe the first step for us, we need to evaluate ourselves and ask the hard question, is my reputation keeping me from Jesus? Is what I am known for disconnecting others from experiencing Jesus? I want to invite the youth band back up. Come on up, guys. And we're going to play a song that's all about Jesus' sovereignty. So listen, the Jesus I know, and maybe the Jesus you know, I hope it's the Jesus you know, has the power to transform us into his image, has the power to bring the dead back to life, has the power to bring sight to the blind, has the power to heal the sick and the hurting. Maybe that means that we need to take a break from what we're known for so that we can realign ourselves to Jesus' calling. Because when we align ourselves with Jesus' calling, when we align ourselves with his mission, we go to places and we bring Jesus to those places. And in that, his kingdom expands and his kingdom grows. Can you imagine what would happen here in Little Falls when the kingdom invades forcefully, yet gracefully? When Jesus becomes relevant and is obvious, is so obvious that we're all just oozing Jesus? I mean, I think we would see more people come together and follow Christ. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying let's grow our church numerically. I mean, as a pastor, I would love to see that. You know, I think that's evidence of people having transformation. But the bigger picture here is we have an opportunity, an obligation to set aside our own agenda for Jesus' agenda. And so when we play this song, I want to encourage you to enter into a space of worship, whatever that looks like. So if you want to sit down and just kind of contemplate where Jesus may be leading you, feel free to sit down. That's okay. If you're in a spot where you're like, man, God, I just need to stand up and put my hands up in the air, that's okay. Go ahead, put your hands up in the air. If you're in a spot where, man, like, I know this is going to be weird, but if you're in a spot where you're going, I just need to get on my knees and pray, go for it. I want to give you an opportunity to reflect, to evaluate where you are at, where your heart is at. Is Jesus in the throne room of your heart? Or is protecting your reputation? Are you in the throne room of your heart?